Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So here's the question. The question is, what is the difference between relative and absolute reality? Right? And how does one work with preferences? So it's actually two questions. Did you want to say more about those questions, or is that just all you want to say? I don't want to say more. I think one of the most interesting things is that both of them are reality. Both relative and absolute are reality. And probably the best way to start to look at them would be from the point of relative or phenomenal. The phenomenal world, the world of existence, which operates in time, and so it is conditioned. That's one of the marks of the relative world. It's dependent on conditions. And in some of the descriptions of Ratnasambhava, of the five Dhyani Buddhas, you know the five Dhyani Buddhas? Do you know the five Dhyani Buddhas? Anybody doesn't know them? In the Theravadan tradition, they talk about the five aggregates. And the five aggregates are form, the ability to create form arising, which is the phenomenal world, right? All compounded things with sentience are composed of five aggregates, five heaps of things together. One is form, one is feeling, very specific type of feeling. One is perception. One is called mental formations or mental formations. Did any of you read Other Lives, Other Selves? Anyone else read that? Did I mention that book to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
So I was making note of this. Mentioned the book. How many people read it again? One person read it. I know how seriously to take you now. Did any of you try to find it? You found it?
Yeah.
So you have it? Yeah. One person found it. Did any of you even consider looking for it? One person considered. It's nice to know the odds when you're talking, you know? Don't you think so? Have I recommended many goods that are a total waste of time? Many books that are a total waste of time? No? You've been real busy. Okay? Terribly busy. Well, you can't answer that because you read it. You're disqualified from this grill. Because that book, to me, is one of the most clear ways of understanding what sankhara means. So it's form, feeling, perception, sankhara. Sankhara. Which is usually translated as mental formations. What it is unfinished business. Motives, looking for a place to ripen. Um, In Western terms, the closest would be a kind of an archetypal energy, an energy that itself is invisible, but can cause form to arise, cause activity. Is that clear? So unfinished business. And then the fifth one is consciousness. So the Buddha many times talked about a mind body is composed of these five things. If you've ever read the Heart Sutra, any of you read the Heart Sutra? You know that those five aggregates are referred to. Form is not separate from emptiness, neither is emptiness separate from form. Feeling is not separate from emptiness, neither is feeling. Emptiness separate from feeling. Perception is not separate from emptiness, neither is emptiness separate from perception. Mental formations are not separate from emptiness, neither is emptiness separate from mental formations. Consciousness is not, right? Empty from, separate from emptiness, neither is emptiness separate from consciousness. And you find the five aggregates referred to over and over and over in all the schools of Buddhism. In the Tibetan school, in deity yoga, the five aggregates are personified as they would be operative in a fully awakened being. So the five aggregates of a Sammasambuddhasa, of a fully awakened being, are personified as what are called the five Dhyani Buddhas. Form, then, is personified as the Dhyani Buddha, Wisdom Buddha, translation, Wisdom Buddha, Varochana, who is this little wheel-turning guy here. Where is he? He's in the middle. Do you want to lift him up, Otto?
This fellow?
So he's got his two hands in the turning of the wheel mudra. His consort is space. The consort is the element. That aspect of consciousness that has the ability to form, to utilize that element, which is form, is represented by Virochana. Okay? So form, the form aggregate becomes the wisdom aspect called Virochana in the Tibetan system. So, straightforward? I don't expect you to remember this. I'm just telling you that there is a direct correlation, okay? The feeling aspect, where's the one with his hand giving? Second one. Is Ratnasambhava. Because he knows exactly how to treat preference. He knows exactly what the difference is between relative and absolute. Never gets them confused. His feelings do not interfere with the wisdom. Right? Therefore, he represents richness. Everything is richness to him. Perception is Amitabha. He's in the meditation mudra. See him there? So his hands are like that. He is the Buddha of boundless light. That's a clue right there, isn't it? Light, perception. His symbol, his throne, is a lotus, because a lotus implies knowing, you know, how you look at something. You can look at it in the mud, you can look at it above duality, above the water, or swayed in movement, right? Three levels of perception. Body, speech, and mind. Unified to create a fourth knowledge of perception based on totality, perceiving the relative. Then there is Amoghasiddhi, who's doing the mudra of fearlessness, which is up in the air. Warding off. He's Sankaras. Oh, I didn't tell you. Feeling, his consort is Earth. Ratnasambhava's consort is Earth. Perception, Amoghasiddhi's consort is Fire. Amitabha's consort is Fire. Amoghasiddhi's consort is air. This is desire. This is, you know, his consort is sometimes called Samayatara. His consort, very often is called Samayatara, his consort is that your word has power. That when a desire is worded, it's going to happen. The truth of this is whatever you get, you wish for, you're going to get. And that is the truth of air. Whichever way the wind blows, it's going to have an effect. He is all accomplishing wisdom. Ratnasambhava is the wisdom of equality. I didn't tell you that, did I? Did I? I didn't. Yeah. And then the last one there, Akshobhya Buddha. Is in the Earth Witness Mudra. His consort is Earth. He's usually at the center of the mandala. He is consciousness.
His consort is Earth?
Yeah. Virochana's consort is space. He is form.
Yeah.
Akshobhya's consort is Earth. He is consciousness. Consciousness. We're talking about the creation of being. How a mind-body comes into being. Consciousness, which has no legs, creates legs. What did I do wrong?
Okay, now I'm confused.
Did I say two were earth?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I did wrong. Is water, sorry. Mm-hmm. Is water. Okay. Sorry. His consort is water. Thank you. And so he's mirror-like wisdom. All five of these are part of every moment of your existence. Is that light bothering your eyes? Do you want to move at an angle or something? Okay. Barry?
No, I'm fine.
Yeah, okay. All five of these, Dhyani Buddhas, are present in your being. Or you have the five aggregates that you're struggling with. All five of these are there and are at your disposal. The five aggregates and the five Dhyani Buddhas and their consorts. Or you have consciousness struggling with these four demons trying to manifest in space. Hunger, sex, sleep, right? Depending on how clearly you see the function of consciousness interacting with the elements. The elements are totally malleable. In fact, if you translate properly the word that describes them, it's called that which is abused. Isn't that terrible? And the consciousness that creates the form is that which abuses or shapes or changes the nature of. It's more that way, you know, more it changes the nature of. So one of the things that's interesting is that the first one, in depending on what meditation you're doing, the first one often that you visualize is earth, Ratnasambhava. Because earth forms, earth is the glue from which the form arises. The consort of earth, Ratnasambhava, is called Guna Ratnasambhava. Guna is a Hindu word. What does it mean, you say, don't you? Are you saying, is she going to go on and on about this esoteric stuff and never tell me anything that's interesting to me? And one of the reasons why I started reading this book again, because I've been really interested in Guna for the last 8 months or so. And in this book it says, according to many ancient systems of philosophy, on page 49, all phenomena that exist from the gods downward arise from the interaction of three forces. One is described as of an active or creative nature. The second as passive or material, and the third as mediating or formative. In Christian philosophy, these three forces are expressed by the three persons of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, which create the universe. In medieval alchemy, all things were seen as varying mixtures of salt, sulfur, and mercury. In Indian Sankhya, a similar role was assigned to the three gunas, rajas, tamas, and sattva. In Hinduism, the forces were again personified as Shiva, Parvati, and Vishnu. In China, they acquired metaphysical caste in the interplay of yin and yang, overseen by the Tao. Okay? Guna means literally quality. and it refers to the basic quality of the world's material support. There are three aspects, or three determining factors of the quality. They are rajas, which he said here, right? Rajas, or passion, energy, that which acts, tamas, or ignorance, inertia, that which is acted upon, and sattva, law, or virtue. Law or virtue is considered to be invisible, like the Holy Spirit. That is to say, when it moves, it moves. How you react to it is a choice you have. In Buddhism and in the Hindu tradition, you have a choice to how you react to it. You have very little choice about whether you like or dislike something. You have a great choice in what you want to do with that liking. Does that make sense to you? That like or dislike is conditioned. That's part of Amoga City, you know? That's coming into effect. That's the wind that's blowing. That's the Holy Spirit that's blowing into you. That's the word that's being repeated over and over, and it's going to come out. You repeat a word over and over, pretty soon you go and you buy the product. Advertising works. That's why it's done. Do you understand that that's true? Some people, whenever an ad comes, they've already got their own ad going, and their own ad is, I don't buy anything that's advertised. So they have a built-in ad that just cuts through any other ad. They can't hear any other ad. But they don't. That's not freedom. That's conditioned by that. Is that clear? Gurdjieff used to say things like, never walk the same way twice. And he wasn't necessarily talking about the street. He was talking about your mind. Be willing to explore what is arising if you would become rich. Not just have a habitual reaction and stick to it. Does that make sense to you? If you dislike something, in a way, that's like the iron wall. Do we have any tonkas here? With mandala, tonkas, pictures? Yeah, here, can I see? Thank you. Can you all see that, or do you want to move closer, or what? So I'm going to show you something here. These are the five elements, well, just the four, actually. Space is assumed, because it's all riddled through all of them. Just as they are dancing in the universe without, these are the consorts without pre-marriage, you know? Just having a good time. Curling around, no particular form. Then there is this word that comes, this desire, this energy that arises. Amoghas City, right? Sankharas. This desire. If you read the book, you'd know exactly what I was talking about here. It's called Other Lives, Other Selves. Perhaps you heard me mention it. Not that I think you should believe everything the book says, but that it really gives you a sense of what sankhara means. And it's a very important principle. It's a very important, it will loosen something for you. That was my experience with it. Was that your experience? Something loosened for you? It allowed you to perceive things that you had habitually perceived one way, you could perceive them differently. Is that true? Would that be interesting to any of you in this room? Other lives, other selves, that's what it's called. So here's all these energies, and then this word comes, this in the beginning was the word, you know, this word, this desire, this craving, this desire, it's in Buddhism, it's called avijja pachaya sankara, right? This ignorance, this ignoring of the totality because there is some sense of wanting something to develop. A wind starts to blow. And there is the protective wall. Out of formlessness comes some kind of form. Self and other. It is both the first separation and the first movement toward wisdom. It's avijja. According to Buddhism, when there is ignorance, immediately there follows craving, false views, and conceit. When there is some ignorance, something ignoring, it's always, you know, in the Vajrayogini, they have her dancing on this Star of David, or sometimes a triangle. That triangle is called by the Tibetans Dharmakara, Dharmakara, and it's considered to be, I love this, the cervix of the universe. Not the womb, because the womb is on either side of it, right? It's a doorway. It's the doorway from which everything is born on either side of the black hole. Do you get the idea? Could travel either way through that doorway. So one way it's craving, false view, and conceit. The other way it's clarity, emptiness, and the non-dual nature. Travel one way, it's one thing. Travel the other way, it's another. Okay? So first is the wall of ignorance. And then this ignorance, slowly the craving sort of builds, and there's this false view. The false view is, oh, there's an object somewhere. Oh, there's a circumstance somewhere. Like the craving, and then it, right linked to the craving, there starts to be some kind of form of what it is that that craving is after. Some vague memory of something missed, some other lifetime. Some vague sense of who didn't get it right, or the argument isn't over and I want to say this. You know what I'm saying? That some vague sense, that's the false view. And conceit is, and I. The craving is the desire. The false view is that there is some object, some sense, that there's something that will satisfy that desire. And the conceit is that there's an I who should do something about it. And immediately, You're in this first line. Now, I don't know if you can see this. The answer is no, those of you at the back, but that's okay. But this is a double line here, and it's blue, but it's got all these little dorjes around it. That is to say, now this is the first beginning of binding consciousness, binding the elements for a purpose. And this is any belief. This represents all the billions of beliefs or identities or views in the universe. Some of them actually get you into a doorway. And you have some power in the universe. Most of them are just beliefs.
I'm a worm.
Clonk.
I'm a robin.
Clonk.
Eventually, over enough lifetimes, you get a view that actually allows you to learn about cause and effect. I'm a human. And to understand that cause and effect is trustworthy. I'm a human. I don't have to like it, but I'm a human. But I might as well accept it. Not what I think, but what, while I'm thinking this, returns to me. Cause and effect. Experience is more valid than thought. That's what a human is to learn. Then they start saying, well, what causes the experience to go this way? What causes it to go that way? You don't get so attached to like and dislike. You start getting interested in returns. Is this interesting to you?
Yeah.
So that's this line, all these many little different ways, you know. And there are, in every cell of your body, there are billions of them. Because of all of the past lifetimes, past experience, billions of little moments of I dissolve, I dissolve, I dissolve. Some teacher who will remain nameless, who spends a lot of time at the Dharma Center in Canada, used to teach Western mysteries, which we won't talk about because they're mysterious. And he taught a course a bunch of people took part in this, who, of course, I won't mention any of by name, had to make costumes for the tarot and the proper props and things, and then he and we had to study the tarot for over a year in some depth, and then this nameless teacher came and assigned each of us a card, and we spent 1 week. Was it a week or more? 10 days, I think. Anyway, somewhere enacting the tarot cards. And during that inaction, one of the cards, which I won't mention, called the Wheel of Fortune. It had these steps, 3 steps up, and the person walked up the steps. It wasn't the Wheel of Fortune. I'm sorry, my brain's bananas. The person walked up the steps and said, I am the king of the universe. And everybody applauded. And then you walked down and everybody started laughing. And then the next person walked up. There were a series of things that happened before that. And after it had happened enough times, you began to understand. There are billions of moments of consciousness of I am the king or queen of the universe operating. And they're all like a bunch of little dorjes. And every cell of your body is made of all of these, I got it, and then dissolving. That's another aspect of the protective circle. That it hold somehow all the past beliefs which haven't worked too. And now we're taking another run at it. Craving, false view, and conceit? Or is it going to be? What do they transfer into? I know you have to listen to the tape, right? Clarity. Emptiness. And dual nature. Craving, the desire, the phenomena, the cause and effect dancing, is really, when you see it, clarity. When you see it, perceive. All the phenomenal world is cause and effect dancing. Just to see it as cause and effect and understand it is clarity. Knowing the nature of it is devoid of an inherent self. I am the king of the... is emptiness. Knowing that those two are not in contradiction. Look at it this way, it's clarity. Look at it this way, it's emptiness. Is the non-dual wisdom. It's only when the I gets in there that there's problem. So then you enter one of these doorways, and it's always one that is going to be one of the elements is particularly strong for you. You enter one of these doorways, and you go around, and there's guardians at this doorway. At the first doorway, they're a little more stringent, and they have things that basically represent Ja, Hong, Bam, Ho. The first one holds what? A hook. They're going to hook you. They're going to hook you out of yourself. In order to pass that doorway, you have to be hooked out of yourself. Hong, what does Hong hold? A rope. They're going to tie you up so you quit squirming. Give you some calm. Okay, you're hooked now. Now you need to be tied up. Bam! They're going to chain you. So the mind not only is tied, but steady. Power. Hold. They're going to blast you to smithereens, so there is no inherent self. There is only the diamond mind in non-dual wisdom with clarity and emptiness. Then you enter the center of the mandala. You know that one. Om Vajra Sama Ja. Ja. Om. Ba. You know that one, don't you? You've done that. When you're in, you know, so then the light waves go out, travel out from the Hong in the center of your heart to invoke the imaging self as deity with a Hong in the heart, usually a Hong, it can be other ones. Light rays traveled out to invoke the wisdom being. They hook the wisdom being and bring it here. And when the light rays are going out, you're doing the fishing rod thing, you know. Om Vajra Samaja, you're winding it in. Only you go this way. Samaja. And your hands are like this. Vajra Samaja. And then you go, calm. Come here. Enter. Merge. become merge, and then no difference at one. Right? So you say ja, ja, hum, bomb. See, there's the chains, right? See the little links of the chains. Bum. Oh, you got links of chains. Hole. Not separate, right? Yeah. The different schools do it different ways. The way I've mostly been taught is wrist to wrist. Yeah. Hole. Sometimes it's represented as a hammer. Sometimes it's represented as a bell. The hole. Ja, hong, bam. Just turn your hands back to back and hook your fingers. Bam. See. Hop. Om Vajra Sama Ja. Ja. Once more. The Hong is sending, you're sending out these light rays, you're asking for the wisdom of the transcendent wisdom of the universe. You're sending out a little hook, you're making a phone call. They're going to pick it up because they can't avoid your call. They've been waiting for it, I'm telling you. They're waiting. So there, you drop the quarter in, you say, Om Vajra Samaja. You reel it in, right? And then, ja, come on over, home, enter, bomb, be one with me, indivisible. Smash to smithereens, no difference between us, just a bunch of dust motes that are not separate from each other. Right? So now I see you've learned more esoterica. It was almost painless, wasn't it? It's nice to know what these things mean, isn't it? So this in the center is the land of the Dhyani Buddhas with their consorts. Usually you have 1, 2, 3, 4 sitting there and their consorts. And here you have their seed syllables. In the 4 different colors. There's white, there's green, there's blue, there's yellow. I'm just holding it sideways in there. So, what you are saying, Andrea, what does this have to do with my question? So, the combination of these 3 gunas, of rajas, which is the passion, the energy, tamas, which is ignorance, inertia, and sattva, which means power to be, the power that creates form, these 3 together create a combination of these 3 makes the whole phenomenon, all the entire phenomenal world arises from these 3. These 3 are the basis of the phenomenal world. The phenomenal world is the relative world. When you understand that there are not fixed self and fixed other, you don't have to even understand it experientially, you just have to understand it intellectually. It's good enough. You start practicing that. And then you practice by saying things like the impure nature of dual perception dissolves into emptiness. And you practice doing that several times a day. Okay, now I'm looking at a person. Now I'm aware that that person is actually a bunch of cells moving around in a body with blood and air. And you just switch your perception. Do you understand that? You practice switching your perception. And teach yourself to let go of the impure perception of duality. Because it is the impure perception of duality that causes one to get caught in preference. It's when there is a belief in duality that preference has power. There is no power to preference if there is no belief in duality. It's simple in that way, isn't it? Can you see that?
I can see it, yeah.
Because if it's a process, there's no thing to change. It's already changing. Then you can ask yourself, what are the laws of formation and change? Then you're into the goodness. Now, you have a question. Did I make sense to you?
Yes. I...
Good. So you probably have a question later. So does that satisfy you for the moment?
It does.
That's a nice question. Thank you for that question. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I know, isn't tomorrow night question night, or is it tonight? Oh, tonight is, isn't it? No. Yeah. Okay. Both nights. Yes, sir.
A little one. When you use the term consort, can you define more what...
I mean consort. In every way, you can mean that word. I mean total infatuation. I want you to have my child, consort. I mean absolutely, totally enthralled. This is the most precious, wonderful. This is the moment. I'm about to have an orgasm right here. Consort. But that's what you do with the element of the earth quality of the present moment. That's what you do with the element of the water quality of the present moment. That's what you do with the fire, with the air, in the space of the present moment. You totally accept the present moment as the consort, whichever face of the five elements is showing. And you're totally infatuated with the present moment. That's consort. So it has to be the total experience in the present moment as consort, or it's not tantra. That's different, isn't it, than most people think about it? Total infatuation with the Dhyani Buddha consort experience of the here and now. So that means the perception has totally changed. There is nothing unworthy about the present moment. You are in union with the present moment to that intimacy anyway. It's just accepting the intimacy in which we always dwell. And not only accepting it, but having a passion for it. Passion that transcends the desire to be separate in case it isn't safe. Because we have a desire to be separate in case it isn't safe, don't we? You bet your sweet bippy. Not looking for the special one, but this is it. In this moment, I am totally fulfilled. It's not an interesting idea. Yeah, but, and yet it, and yet it, and yet it. That's Tantra. And there aren't very many people who are ready to practice with an actual consort at that level. You can appreciate that, can't you?
You might be able to imagine that.
There aren't very many people who could actually take a person and use them as a consort for that level. A lot of people may do that and say they're doing it, but they're not actually doing it. Because they're still caught in preference. Does that make sense to you? Some people are able to do that. They're not usually the ones who are looking for a partner. In fact, in the Tibetan system, they used to bring partners to meditators at a certain point. Because it was a good idea to get them back in the world and practicing compassion in the community. And that was one way to do it. Because they were living in that state. Therefore, that's not usually what you hear about when you... Is it? It hasn't been my experience of the great tantric lovers I've met in my career as a meditation, as a meditator. I've usually been a little bit suspicious unless I was horny, you know. Then I didn't have to be suspicious. I already knew on my side what the story was. There is something to be said for celibacy. Quite a lot, actually. Is that a question?
Yeah.
Down at your navel, or was that lower? A lower part of your anatomy has a question? No.
Yeah.
No.
It just feels to me like what you're saying is that on that wheel, that between the energy and the coming into being there, that's what you're talking about, that instant of moving into form?
Out of formless into form.
And it would...
The first thing that arises is the iron wall, otherwise known as ignorance.
Yeah, and basically that's what we're doing all the time.
All the time. All the time. All the time. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And to actually become conscious in that process. That's the work.
Yeah.
So you use these mandalas and you interact them. You see yourself as becoming the mandala. You see yourself as the building. You see yourself as a divine mansion sometimes with different levels. Because it's true. Different activities, different doorways. Oh, this is the Ratnasambhava doorway speaking. Oh, this is the Amitabha doorway speaking. Amitabha, his consort, is called Pandaravasini. Pancha Dvara, the five doors that have gone beyond self-object, subject-object perception. So perception without grasping, not related to dual nature, dual, you know, the impure perception of duality, of subject-object. So when you perceive something, you can perceive it, and then you can play with the idea of perceiving it beyond the duality of the senses. The five senses. You play with that idea. Perception is one of the easiest to work with, which is why, you know, the Pure Land School, just working with the name of Amitabha is enough to cause rebirth. And it is, because you're perceiving everywhere, calling, perceiving Amitabha. I mean, it's actually true. In spite of our cynicism, it's true. Just perceiving Amitabha everywhere, yes. What a good idea. Or as my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche said one day, imagine you're awakened.
How do I do that?
Isn't that nice? The real lesson is take it personally. Take Dharma personally and with joy, you know, and don't be so somber about it. Usually only beginners are really somber. You guys have been around for a long time. You women have to. Any other questions, answers? Yes.
Oh, I have a question about feeling, the feeling formation. Is that emotion?
Emotion is like the glue, isn't it? Emotion is the glue that hardens the form, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like, I always think of emotion as like the glue. It's either going to make a wall or a doorway, right? Depending on how you glue it. With the glue, you can make a space here or you can make a solid thing, right? And emotion is like the glue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Emotion is basically either you're going to accept something or you're going to reject it. There's all the different phases in between, right? If it's jealousy, then what you're doing basically is rejecting yourself. Because the outer has got you totally identifying out there. So you've closed the doors of your being to yourself because you're trying to live in somebody else's body. Isn't it? Any problem with that? Jealousy doesn't happen if you're at home. Jealousy only happens if you think that somebody else has got what you don't have.
Did you say envy is similar?
They're very similar. At the moment, I can't remember how they're distinguished. Can anyone?
Sometimes I think there's a, you might say, more of an element of greed with envy and hatred and jealousy. I've heard something like that.
Mm-hmm. I just can't remember exactly, so yeah, that's something there. I think because I'm very lazy, so I lump the two together always in my own mind. That's my emotional preference. So they're glued together in my mind. Just a second more, it's okay. So with the emotion, you have basically, you could narrow it down to what you accept and what you reject. And there are, you know, feelings. There are five kinds of feeling. Like pleasure and pain physically. Liking and disliking and neutrality mentally. Now, those emotions are not based on an experience you haven't had. Are they? Your emotional reactions are not based on an experience you haven't had. Are they? What are they based on? Something that you have experienced. Last time I didn't like this, therefore. Or last time I watched my uncle eat one of these and he, therefore. Or, right? So they're part of the word, of the form. You know, they're part of the form that I am. The form is useful in that it shows you what has been. It is the richness of what has been experienced. All those little moments of dust, I am the king. That's what the form is. Have you attained full satisfaction in your previous experience? Anybody in this room? Well, then maybe you don't want to only repeat the past experience. So it's not useful to use emotion as the criteria or feeling as the criteria for, you don't say, I didn't like this in the past, therefore I'm going to trash it now. But you could say, I didn't like this in the past, I've got a little time, therefore now I'm going to see what dislike is or whether there's something about it I like. Do you understand that? Because maybe it is your past experience is blocking you from learning something else that could be the missing link for you. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. The knowledge you have based on past experience is useful. But it should not rule your consciousness. Like and dislike is useful, but if it rules your consciousness, you're going to repeat the past. Not a good idea. Because you didn't awaken then. So maybe you want to do something new, you know? Maybe there's some other slight way you could get just a little more data. Yes. Yes. something you wanted to say?
Oh, it's just a thought occurred to me when you were talking about the emotions being groove. And it said you having a sense of groove.
That's what they feel like to me. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
It does?
But the scientists come up with the statement that the universe now is held together by little things called gluons.
Oh, yeah? That's beautiful.
The universe is held together by gluons.
That's beautiful. Because that exactly fits with qualities. You know? The power is in the sattva, right? Rajas is the passion, the energy. Tamas is the inertia, the inactive one. And sattva is the virtue or the law. That what has been before, the being, what has been. The virtue is the power, what has the power to manifest. The law, the word. I find this very exciting, you know, I get very excited about this kind of stuff. Isn't that sick? And it's invisible. Sattva is invisible. Just like feeling. It's the gluon. The force that has the passion, that wants to act, the consciousness. The force that's going to be acted upon. And the gluon. Which is invisible. But don't be so impressed by your glue. Hopefully. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? So the thing about that protective chakra of ignorance is it's always dissolving too. Do you understand that? It comes into being and it's also dissolving all the time too. For every being that is born in every second in your own life, there is another being that is dissolving every second in your own life. What is the glue that is forming? You know, what is the one that you're clinging to, that you're focusing on, that you keep pulling forward and recreating? That's an interesting question. What is it you habitually dislike? What is it you habitually like? Never walk the same way twice. That's such a beautiful rule. Never walk the same way twice. It's so lovely. Isn't that lovely? Always pretend this is the first time and you're totally in love with the world. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect fit. Wouldn't that be interesting? Mm-hmm. Not that you have to pretend you don't know what a green light or a red light is, you know. You have respect for your environment, which includes this life. This body has the power to survive. Here we are. You respect your ability to survive. And allow yourself to notice when you're trying for safety habitually, when ignorance is creating a wall between you and the world, and say, okay, what is this self on about? How can the craving, false view, and conceit be turned into clarity, emptiness, non-dual wisdom? This way one thing, this way another. Clarity, emptiness, non-dual wisdom, craving, false view, and conceit. It doesn't matter which way it is. And the four elements arise, and then there is a double dorje on top, and the mantra comes. The word comes. Amoghas City arrives. Ooh, and this is the form it takes. And the word comes. I like mangoes. I hate mangoes. I'm just overwhelmed by life. I'm just overwhelmed by life. But you don't understand I'm special. But you don't understand I'm special. I. Continuously arising. Continuously dissolving. And what is it that is actually arising and dissolving? Other than the habit, what is that power of the word that creates that I? We're so impressed by the like and dislike and the habitual expectations. We miss the absolute universal power of form, forming in every moment. Not I am forming, but my God, bones! Whoa! Hallelujah! Maybe I better stop watching Vision TV. Slow down, sir. Have a sip of tea. Okay.
Is there any use to consider the time the word emptiness comes up all the time? And I've been getting a sense of it, feeling at the moment of softening and opening.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's why it's empty of inherent identity.
You let go.
Empty of inherent identity. So softening is softening identity.
Softening
opening is opening
you
windows.
The whole business up.
Yeah, that's right.
And you open.
Immediately. No problem. Nicer feeling, too. Altruism is a lot more fun than trying to figure out what's wrong with me. How can I practice generosity with you is a lot more fun than how come you don't appreciate me? Isn't it? It's a lot more fun. A lot more fun to just figure out how you can play around with somebody's bad mood than to actually take it as a serious insult. Isn't it? Oh, they're really pissed off. I wonder what they'd feel like if I put a chocolate-covered strawberry in front of them. Hee hee hee. But But I am somebody who is supposed to be respected. They're pissed off at me. I am the queen of the... Isn't that beautiful? All of us, we climbed up there, all in our costumes, you know. I was the maggots.
Apparently, they're popular queens for everything, and there was Sudbury, they had an artificial ice queen.
Artificial ice queen.
Artificial ice.
Oh, this opens a whole new dimension for me. Oh, yeah. Because you know how when you take yourself seriously, you really are on top of there saying, I. When you're saying, I, you can't see thou. Or even have a decent question. Or smell spring. Or any of those things. Can you, really? What?
No. I guess when you're saying that, it's the way you open and close fist, huh?
And so fearlessness, isn't that wonderful? Hey, I got nothing to hide. Ta-da.
I had an insight quite a while ago about perceiving the difference between sort of a non-I environment and suddenly seeing something other and realizing that's not me, so who am I, and sort of the creation of an I arising.
Yeah, and it's very specific, isn't it? It's a real specific feeling, isn't it?
But what I just realized was I thought, oh, well, what a great insight that was at that time.
Yeah.
But now I realize that that's what happens in every moment.
Continuous.
It's continuously happening.
Continuously happening and continuously dissolving.
And it's like and dislike that makes you skip over the awareness of that.
Yeah.
Because you're suddenly, you don't see it happening.
No, there's
preferences.
Craving and clinging to the particular like and dislike. And grasping and clinging to a self who never really actually existed anyway. Because it's only how one remembers it. And have you ever sat in a room with a whole bunch of your family members and discussed an occurrence? Well, isn't that interesting, eh? Does anybody have the same memory? I told you, my sister's father was born in Germany and my father was born in Poland. I told you that. Same man, we point to the same picture. He was not, she said. He was so, I said. There's one part of me going, what? What are you doing, Cecily? What? So her father was born in Germany. Fine. No problem. But by God, it was my father. Or, you know. And watching that is wonderful. Watching that, you can feel the rigidity, can't you? Mm-hmm. Watching that and kind of enjoying it, but don't take it so seriously. Lighten up. Everybody's doing it. Admire somebody else's production once in a while. Boy, you make a great eye. I'm glad to see such a wonderfully produced eye. You know, that's one of the better eyes I've seen. This is the most creative thing we do. is create and recreate and recreate the self. Dissolve it and dissolve it, and we don't even know we're doing it. We miss half of fun. The mandala is continuously coming into being and continuously passing away. And the Dhyani Buddhas are continuously dancing with the consorts and continuously dissolving into totality. And that's absolute reality. Void nature. You know what the highest refuge is? The Sangha, which is clarity, cause and effect dancing. The Dharma, which is void nature, no inherent identity, the truth of that. The Buddha, which is the eternal mind of non-dual wisdom, clarity and emptiness. And the Guru, which is the manifestation of that truth in every moment. That's refuge. Isn't it? Namo Guru. Namo Buddhaya. Namo Dhammaya. Namo Sangha. How beautiful. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, complaints? You want to go out and play basketball? It's a real summer sound, isn't it? So, is there a beautiful gold light in your hearts? Spreads through your body, pours out your pores in all directions. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance, due to protective circles, due to ignorance, clinging to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, that light just penetrates as temporarily as washed, so everybody knows. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share with all beings, so there is such suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share with all beings, so there is such suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share with all beings, so there is such suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.